Welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first bilingual show for CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. And tonight I have a guest whom I just met, and I'm very excited to talk to him because I've been reading his book, and it's really fantastic. We have Keldon from Minnesota. He has been practicing traditional witchcraft for more than a decade. He is the author of The Crooked Path, An Introduction to Traditional Witchcraft. Additionally, his writing has appeared in The Witch's Altar, The New Aradia, A Witch's Handbook to Magical Resistance, and This Witch magazine. Keldon is also the co-creator of the Traditional Witch's Deck, and he authors a blog on the Pathias Pagan Channel called by Athame and Stang. In his free time, Keldon enjoys reading, hiking, growing poisonous plants, and playing the ukulele. What? Talk about a versatile personality. Welcome to the show, Keldon. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing great. Finally, looks like spring is trying to sprung, and you know, we are hopeful that we will have somewhat of a traditional, you know, spring. I don't think, I keep saying that I don't want things to go back to normal. I want things to go to new and better. So hopefully this spring will bring us a little bit of new and better. And speaking of new friends, it's so good to meet you. It's so good to have you on the show. And thank you for saying yes and for coming to this interview. And I will ask you what I always ask my guests. How did you get into the path of witchcraft, paganism? Do you identify as a witch?
I do identify as a witch.
So how do you find the path?
This is always a fun story to tell because it's sort of a lifelong journey. I've seemingly always been into witches ever since I was very little. Like looking back on my childhood, like early on, it's hard not to remember a time where witches weren't playing a part in my life. And so I played a lot as a child, kind of assuming the character of the witch, spending a lot of time out in the woods and, you know, casting spells and making potions. It wasn't until I was about 10 or 11 that I discovered that there were people actually practicing modern witchcraft, specifically finding this through the channel of Wicca. And that kind of set me off on a whole new journey where then I'm devouring all of these books and whatever materials I can get my hands on, you know, and over the years, of course, my path would grow and change and evolve in different ways to where I am now. But really, it's just been an ongoing lifelong process of discovery.
And when you say when I was 12, and I'm like yesterday, right? Because you're extremely young, or you look extremely, I'm not going to ask your age. None of my business, but you look very young, and you know, it's I'm really very happy to see this book. This book is very complete. It's amazing. For those who don't know, we are going to be talking about The Witch's Sabbath by Keldon, but that is gonna take a minute because I also want to ask you about your interest on Aradia. And, you know, the historical Aradia and then the new Aradia that you participated on. How did that came about?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I think the story of Aradia is so essential and so pivotal. I mean, this is a really important mythological, folkloric character within our, you know, within our history as witches, and whether or not that is a particular spirit that you work with, I think it's just, it's a figure that permeates in so many different ways. I mean, even like looking at it historically, the work of Charles Leland really played a role in the development of modern witchcraft. So she's really kind of everywhere, even if we're, you know, not necessarily working with her. When it comes to the new Erratia, the anthology put together by Laura Tepezakroff, I was asked to submit kind of my own little piece of work to the collection, which was super cool. I felt really honored to do that. And with the idea of, you know, especially in the last few years, we're seeing such such a rise in people resisting the overculture, and especially as witches, kind of realizing and tapping into the roots of what it means to be a witch, which is often to push back against society. So it was really awesome getting to contribute my own piece to this really fantastic collection.
That is amazing. And I know that for some people, you know, it's controversial because, you know, speaks in terms or makes notations of things that are considered more like Catholic, and that is not historically accurate, and that it talks about the devil. And a lot of people have issues with it. But as a piece of La Resistance, I think it's an amazing book. And I don't know if you know this, but I feel compelled to tell you. In Latin America, and all the Spanish-speaking communities, there is this rise of feminism and inclusive intersectional feminism, where women, femmes, transgender women, and allies are taking on the goddess as an icon, the goddess for resistance. And it's incredible that they are not taking that goddess icon as a religious icon, but rather as a symbol for resistance, you know? So you are absolutely correct. There is a resurgence, and it's like she's awakening everywhere, you know? That is great. So I also wanted to ask you about the traditional witch's deck. How did you get involved on that?
Well, so that was a really, really awesome project to work on. So I was approached by my good friend, Maggie Elram, and she's a really incredible artist. And she approached me with the idea of creating a oracle deck based on imagery coming out of traditional witchcraft. And she was specifically looking for someone who would write the companion book that would go along with this deck. And so we sat down and we just started hashing out ideas, like what would we include in this deck? How would this look? How would we do it? How would we market it? And working on the book was quite a process in terms of, at first, kind of thinking like, okay, like I'll make like a little booklet and each card I'll talk about the history and the folklore of like the symbol. And I was doing that and I got quite a ways in and I realized this is not the way I wanted to do it. I wanted instead to tell stories, to make each card a story that contained those symbols and contained possible interpretations and meanings. But you're getting it in sort of this small folklore narrative, or rather folktale narrative. And that's how it ended up being. At this point, you know, we've done two releases of the deck. We do them in very relatively small batches. So it's kind of this, I don't know, like rare item. So we're looking at possibly maybe doing a third printing. But we'll see what happens.
I'm raising my hand because I'm gonna need a copy, of course. I will need to buy one, and I'm so intrigued. And I know I told you we were going to be chatting more about your life and projects before the book, but I cannot wait. I just cannot wait. I want to start talking because there's so much I want to talk about on the book. So for those who don't know what we're talking about, The Witch's Sabbath by Keldon, and I want to read what was sent to me by your editors. It says, "Take a flight." Oh, bear with me, folks, when I read in English, my accent thickens. Take a flight for a mesmerizing exploration of an event long shrouded in fear and mysteries, The Witch's Sabbath. Keldon presents an in-depth examination of the Sabbath's historical and folkloric development, as well as it reemerged within the modern practice of witchcraft. From discussions on the folklore of flight and the events of nocturnal gatherings to enchanting rituals and recipes, you'll find everything you need to not only understand the nature of the legendary Sabbath, but also journey there yourself, offering an impressive research and compelling stories from across Europe and the early American colonies. This book is the ultimate resource for discovering an oft misunderstood and overlooked aspect of witchcraft. And of course, includes a foreword by Jason Mackey, the author of The Horned God of the Witches. I really fancy myself as being just a like folk witch. You know, I don't do a whole lot of like research, historical, academic, blah, blah. And this book got me by the eyeballs, man. It's just, I'm like glued to it. I loved how you broke it down, how you start like from the beginning to the end. And I don't want to give out too much of the book, obviously. But the first thing that caught my eye that I was like, yes, somebody finally said it on a book. How we romanticize those people that were accused as witches, as being the ancestor witches, that we are descendants of them. And they were not self proclaimed to be witches. These were God-fearing women. Tell us a little bit about that research and how it went.
So this is always a very contentious topic, because and one of the things that I really hope people take away from this book is realizing how much we are influenced as modern practitioners by the witch trials, by confessional material given by the accused, because it's sort of this, I don't know, it's almost sort of this like dichotomy, right? Like on one hand, you have people who are like, these are our ancestors, they were witches, and we are descended from them. And then on the other hand, there's like this other polar opposite where it's like, they absolutely weren't witches. We don't even need to bother looking at them. They don't matter. Like, and neither of those opposites are ideal because we are influenced by them. And they were, I mean, predominantly innocent. They weren't practicing witchcraft, and they especially weren't practicing witchcraft in ways that, you know, we would think of today. I always like to make space that there are certain cases where it would appear that the accused was practicing some type of folk magic, but of course that doesn't equate to witchcraft. In the eyes of interrogators, it certainly would have. But again, it wouldn't be anything that necessarily looks like what we would think of as witchcraft today. So we have to make space to honor the fact that they are innocent. So in my writing, I make it a point to always use the term accused witch rather than witch to denote that difference. But at the same time, we can't throw them out completely and just ignore them because their confessional material has played a role in the development of the folklore that would enter into modern witchcraft. So in some ways, I feel like it's quite disrespectful to just kind of toss them aside.
Absolutely. And I think most importantly, because they were accused and they were tried and murdered, and they're women, so the misogynistic aspect of it all. But also, something that you mentioned on the book is whether they were practicing or not, These were rebellious women. So, by the definition of what a witch is in the modern times, even if you were not practicing spells and, doing that kind of magic, they were outcasts. And that's why they were targeted and accused, right?
Right. I mean, there's a lot of dynamics that go into the witch trials, and there definitely is a very kind of central pillar of misogyny throughout. But we find, I mean, we do find in different areas, I mean, again, predominantly a lot of people who are accused are outcasts. They are people who aren't, conforming to society's standards. But of course, we also get into areas where, people are being accused as sort of ploys within like a political scheme. So sometimes we do get people from upper class being accused of witchcraft, or we get people being accused not necessarily because they are an outcast or because, necessarily for misogynistic purposes, but because they have something that whoever the accused or is accusing or the central body of government wants, and this is how they're going to get it. But yes, I would definitely agree that there is this very central kind of rebellion to it as well. And we see that on a, on a folkloric level too, that witches are rebellion.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. So, another piece on the book that I find fascinating is you cannot talk about the Sabbath without talking about the devil. And a lot of pagan, neo-pagan, Wiccan witchcraft practitioners snuff on the image of the devil. They're like, no, that is a Christian construct. We're not going to talk about it. It's not part of our cosmogony is the word, I think. Again, ESL here. So you do talk about the devil a lot in this book, and again, without giving out as much as or as little of the book you want to. Why is it so important that we talk about the devil?
It's important in the sense that it's a part, again, of our folkloric heritage as witches. And I always try to stress that I'm in no way trying to say that like any modern witch needs to or has to work with the devil, because at this point, witchcraft is so expansive and so many different things that, it's up to you to decide what you're going to do. But when we look at the history and the folklore of witchcraft, we cannot ignore the devil because the devil is there. Who exactly is the devil? That becomes the really like juicy piece to research, because we find that there's quite a few different answers for that, and they're not as, straightforward as they seem. So from my perspective, one thing is that with the rise of Christianity, any spirit, deity, whoever, who's not the Christian God is immediately labeled as the devil or a devil. And in this sense, many of these spirits are being preserved under this title. And we see this character of the devil. It's interesting because so in sort of modern speak, we break this down into the idea of the theological devil and the folkloric devil. And so the theological devil is when people talk about Satan, versus the folkloric devil is sort of this other character that emerges in popular stories. It's also important just to recognize that, there's a difference between a lot of the terms being used, like Satan, the devil, Lucifer. These are not always the same thing. So when we look at the folklore of witchcraft, when we look at what was developing, we're not finding witches working with pagan gods and goddesses as we see today. We see them working with the devil. And I think that's an important thing to explore. And again, it's sort of like, you don't have to work with that concept in your own modern practice, but you also can't pretend that it was not a thing. And I don't think it's as simple as just saying like, oh, like, well, that was just Christian propaganda. Because when we take a step back and we look at it further, I mean, really the concept of witchcraft itself, not magic, but specifically witchcraft, comes out of and in response to Christianity. So at the same time that we could say, well, the devil's just Christian propaganda, well, witchcraft is also then just Christian propaganda.
Absolutely.
Which I realize is a very bold, controversial statement to make.
But it's not, because when you actually research the things that we do, and when you actually go deep into folk magic and who told the story and who preserved the records and who built the bridge that connects us to those ancestors, is the Catholic Church, is the Christian propaganda. So, you know, as much as we will want to romanticize all these things, when you do serious research, which is what you did for this book, you cannot not mention where it comes from. I was very happy to see also, I mean, not happy is probably not the right word, satisfied, enamored of the fact that you talk about the incredibly racist beginning of the Sabbath that is not only prejudicial against, you know, women or people who were fighting against the status quo, but also extremely racism and prejudice. Can you tap into that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, there's this interesting thing that happens because when we look at sort of the earliest link in the development of the Sabbath concept, we see that it's actually the persecution of Christians where this starts. And I think that's really shocking and surprising. I know when that came up in my research, I was totally shocked. But when we look back into the ancient world, when we look at Greece, when we look at Rome, when Christianity first became known, when it started to become a thing, the early pagans were very suspicious of it. And what's interesting is before the Christians, the Jewish people were already around. And the early pagans were relatively tolerant of the Jewish people. They weren't as suspicious. Now, that's not to say that they weren't awful, but they weren't as reactionary to it as they were with Christianity. So when Christianity takes hold, when it becomes the dominant religion, and they start kind of looking at like, who are our enemies? And right away we're seeing particular groups being targeted, including the Jewish people. They actually take a lot of the accusations that were lodged against them by the early pagans and start to put them on other people, including the Jewish people. And we see this in the way that Judaism starts to be seen as, you know, as a form of heresy, and then elements of sorcery are brought into the accusations. And another huge way that we see this is just the fact that before the term Sabbath really becomes like the term to describe these meetings of witches, the biggest term used before that is synagogue, which is directly related to the Jewish people. And so we're seeing that early anti-Semitic attitude being, you know, being put in place.
It is really mind-blowing, and, you know, it usually happens like that. We do the deed, and then we blame it on the person that we perpetrated against, and that's how, for example, the Aztec religion, bigger quotes for those that cannot see me through the sound, There is no such thing as Aztec, nor it is a religion, but because it was a tale told by the padres, you know, by the priests, they saw the culture through their lens, and then that's how they wrote it. And now we ended up having an Aztec religion, which never existed, and we're not Aztec anyway. But I digress. I love all the research that you did for this book. It looks like, I don't know, if I was me, I think it would have taken me like 20 years. So I have to ask you, you know, the technical part of it, how did you get into writing about the Witch Sabbath, and how many years do you dedicated to research for this? It feels like so rich.
So the Witch of Sabbath, the concept of the otherworldly gathering of witches and spirits is an important part of my practice. It's something that I actively engage in. So I knew that I wanted to write about it, especially because, as I talk about within the book, the Sabbath really represents this sort of nexus of all of the different pieces that I see as making up what it means to be a witch. So things like trafficking with spirits, flying, working spells, whether that's for blessing or for bane, all of these things, they come together at the Sabbath. And so it's sort of this mystical crossroads of all of the different pieces of our art as witches. So I also love history. I love folklore. So it was an awesome opportunity to be able to really engage in those aspects. It took me about 2 years to write this book, which, is a relatively short time. But I just, it's like when it comes to research, whether it's history or folklore, I mean, you put a quarter in and I will just go. So once I'm feeling inspired, it's hard to slow down.
Well, it's so great that you got inspired, because this is a great book for those people. When is it actually officially coming out?
It is out.
It's out.
It
Okay.
is out. It
It's
is out in the
out.
world. People can read it now.
Oh yeah, January. Okay, never mind. Silly me. I didn't do my homework. It's out already. The Witch's Sabbath by Keldon, an exploration of history, folklore, and modern practice. And you have a lot of folklore here. You have different ways of describing the Sabbath, and you have lots and lots of exercises. What a huge responsibility to tell people, and you can experience it when you do this. So tell us about how you decided which exercises and how they were written to be put on the book.
So first and foremost, my approach to witchcraft and to magic is always going to be very down to earth, right? For me, it's about like, let's get to the work, let's get the thing done, let's get there. We don't need all of the pretenses and the extra bits. Like, let's focus on the work. And when it comes to otherworldly travel, when it comes to spirit flight, the biggest thing it comes down to is creating a trance state. And so you need to be able to utilize methodology to induce that trance. By and large, the biggest thing for me, and really what I see as the crux of it all, is your breathing. So I knew that I really wanted to incorporate a lot of deep breathing skills into this, as well as visualization. And visualization is a tricky topic because, and as I talk about in the book, I think when we hear visualization, we often think, okay, visual, eyes, seeing, and it's much more than that. Visualization incorporates all of your senses. And some of us, those senses are, some of them are stronger than others, right? So we know, for example, like people specifically with aphantasia, like they're not able to see these images, but can you think about them? Can you imagine what it would smell like, what you would feel, what you would hear? And I think those senses are just as important as your sight. So I wanted to incorporate those elements as well, but in ways then that people can really make that work for them if, you know, one sense is maybe stronger than the others. And I wanted these exercises to really build on themselves as well, right? So you start with deep breathing and then you progress through visualization. And it's building to the point that then you are able to use all of these things together and make that otherworldly journey. The last thing I would say about really the exercises that I try to be really mindful and purposeful of is allowing them to be instructive while still allowing a lot of space for people to modify them and to incorporate their own preferences, especially when it comes to the Sabbath, when it comes to otherworldly travel. Like I can help facilitate up to the point of travel, but everything after that, it's largely up to you. It's up to, you know, the organic nature of the other world and of the Sabbath. Those experiences will be your own. So I knew that that was going to be a sort of limitation, but hopefully people catch on to that and it inspires them to realize just how, you know, important their input is in the process.
I really appreciate how much you talk about safety as well throughout the book, you know, to be prepared, to have safety, to recognize which entities or deities or spirits or whichever beings appear to join us on the Sabbath. And again, without giving out the whole book, my favorite, I will have to say, is chapter 6, the Sabbath Circle. And you tap into all the different entities that could or could not appear and how to deal with them. Can you tap into that a little bit?
Yeah. So when we look at the folklore of the Sabbath, we see a few different types of spirits that would appear at the Sabbath. But then when we move into modern practice, we see a little bit more. We see a few extra different types of spirits that can appear at the Sabbath that maybe aren't talked about in the folklore, but spirits that certainly exist in the other world and would pop up at the Sabbath. So we're looking at specifically, we're looking at witches, the spirits of witches. And this is really fascinating because when you go to the Sabbath and you see these other witches, the question is, who are they? Are they people you know? Are they other witches from around the world? Are they witches that have passed on? So are these people from different parts of history? And I think yes to all of that. Now, is it likely that you'll see people you recognize? Maybe. I think that there is some unspoken, mysterious force of the Sabbath that sometimes kind of shrouds our identity. And I think we sort of become other when we step into the other world. But witches play a big part of the Sabbath circle. We also have deity, perhaps. Again, I think this largely will always hinge on the relationship you have with different spirits. So if there is a Sabbath leader, who that is going to depend on the relationships you have. So in a classic sense, right, this would be the devil. It could be the queen of Elfheim or the fairy queen, but it could very well be other deities, gods or goddesses that you work with. You also have familiar spirits, so the attending spirits to witches. So you might encounter, if you have your own familiar spirit, you'll likely encounter them there. You might encounter the familiar spirits of the other witches present, the fair folk, so the fairies, ancestors. So really, it's a whole cabal of spirits.
Coming together for the aquelarre. I love to see that you use the word
Yeah.
aquelarre as well, because you know that is what we call it in Spanish, el aquelarre. So I know I have tried to ask, you know, I'm shy to give away the whole book, but is there anything that I haven't asked you that you think is vital that is told today in this interview?
I think one thing that is important is the distinction of the witch's Sabbath and Sabbats in terms of the wheel of year, because the witch's Sabbath reemerges in modern witchcraft in two distinct ways. And, you know, and I'll caveat this by saying, you know, neither way is more right than the other. It's not about that. And in fact, I think it's really cool because we sort of now get two different stories, and that's pretty neat. So we see this emergence in the early mid 20th century, and we would call this the witchcraft or the witch cult hypothesis. Excuse me. And this is largely new interpretations about the witch trials, and that these people were actually, the accused were actually participants in the continuation of pagan religion, right? This idea of a witch cult. So these people really were witches. They were practicing some form of older paganism. And I always like to point out that today we often attribute this to Margaret Murray, but this idea of witch cults were already sort of being written about in different ways 2 centuries prior to when Murray published her book, The Witch Cult in Western Europe. So there's kind of a long history of that as well that unfortunately I think a lot of people are unaware of. But Murray's writing goes on to influence Gerald Gardner, and this construction happens where the Witch's Sabbath becomes this set of seasonal holidays, these gatherings of witches. And of course, this would develop further specifically within modern Wicca, but I would say neo-paganism broadly as well, where, right, these Sabbats are special days that reflect the narrative of the god and the goddess, and it's reflected in the changing seasons. At the same time, though, the Witch's Sabbath is also coming through via the work of specific occultists and magicians in terms of its more folkloric sense, that this is an otherworldly gathering that you can attend, and in doing so, you find different pieces of knowledge and power. And it's all sort of encoded in this Sabbatic imagery. So I think that's an important piece. And it plays a role that in this book, when I start to talk about modern practice, because of course, in this book, we're not talking about the Wheel of Year, we're not talking about the seasonal Sabbats, we're talking about the Witch's Sabbath as an otherworldly gathering.
Thank you so much for giving that extra piece, because we really needed to clarify that and to understand. I love this book. It has history, it has folklore, it has exercises, it has everything you need so you can understand and learn and actually get into practicing, you know, visiting that other world in realm of the Witch Sabbath. I know you're busy right now doing presentations and interviews and promoting this book. So would you tell us after today, what a day also is a liminal day, February 28th. So starting tomorrow, is there any presentations, classes, courses, or things that you'll be doing?
So the biggest thing, I will be at PaganaCon, which is in Minneapolis. And that is next month in March. I can't remember the specific days. It's around the equinox. But I will be there doing some presentations, including one on the Witch's Sabbath. So that's the biggest one coming up. And I'm very excited for that.
That is great. That is awesome that you're going to be promoting. And I have to ask you, this is kind of a silly question, but where can you people get your book? I have to ask.
People can get my book really wherever books are sold, I guess. I mean, I think the biggest one obviously is Amazon, which I know we all have different feelings about. But if you are not a fan of Amazon, you can get it from Barnes & Noble. You can order it directly from Llewellyn's website. And of course, I always recommend first and foremost that you seek it out at your local bookshop, your local occult store. Support local is best.
Of course. And as always, remember that if you go to your local store and they don't have it, you can ask the person who runs the local store to call Llewellyn and have Llewellyn send some copies because I know they're fantastic about that. So thank you, Calden, for being on the show. It was very great to meet you. Thank you for giving me something that you don't know. People ask me, why do you interview? Because I learned the things that were not in the book, and I am that selfish. And this is like a private, it's like a private class for me. So I just happened to share with y'all. Yes, I'm good like that. So, thank you so much for being here tonight. And all what is left for me to ask you is to give you the microphone so you can say goodbye tonight for your audience, whether they listen live or later, so they can hear from you.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and it was very nice to meet you too. And thank you to everyone listening. It's always fun just to get to have these conversations and blab about history and folklore. It's always my favorite. So, thank you for having me.
Of course, thank you for being here. And I would like to ask everybody to please connect with CSNP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. We have over 700 hours of podcasts that you can listen, download, share, or keep for your personal audio archives. And to tell you a little bit about the other bilingual show, Paganos del Mundo, is on Spanish and Portuguese. And in March, we will have shows by Christian Ortiz, Carolina Amor, Harwa Tuleva, and Patricia Finclair. And on Lunatic Mondays, we're going to have Monica Govin on the first Monday. That's in Spanish. The second week, we're going to have Jason Mankey talking about the Witch's Book of Spellcraft. On the Social Justice Series on the third Monday, we're going to be talking about Women's History Month. And the last Monday of February, Jesus, I forgot how to English. The last Monday of March, we will have Phoenix Lafay talking about their book as well. And also every Sunday and every Wednesday, we have Selena Fox with Nature Mystic and Nature Spirituality. 2 Tuesdays a month, we have Deborah Rose with Circle Talk. And 2 Thursdays a month, we have David and Janet Ewing with Moon Magic. And every third Friday of the month, we have Blue Marble with Charlotte Bear. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to thank you all for listening to Lunatic Mondays. Please forgive me. I don't know what happened today. I stumbled on my words too many times. Oh, well, that's what happened when you're recording live. And thank you, everybody. I'm going to leave you with some music at the end of the show. There will be some music, so just listen. You're going to like it because it's going to be about witches. So thank you, everybody, for being here tonight. And until we see each other again, never forget that you are loved. Bye-bye.
Time when we shall create delight is the witch and
Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.